This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 11th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 255. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, it's MMA time again. Mackin, Mario, and Andy. Research co's Mario Canseco and Simon Fraser University's Andy Yan join me to set the stage for the October 15th civic election in Vancouver. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Almost 1 month to go. Voters across British Columbia go to the polls October 15th to elect new councils, school boards, and in Vancouver, a park board. Joining me on the podcast is Mario Canseco, president of Research Co., and Andy Yan, director of the Simon Fraser University City Program. It's MMA time again. Mackin, Mario, and Andy.
Queen Elizabeth II is no longer with us. Her reign is over. She has passed away on September the 8th, and King Charles is now in power over in London. Just one word about Queen Elizabeth's reign in office for so many years, for these 70 years. What one word describes Queen Elizabeth to you, Mario?
Resilient. And one of the things that is quite fascinating looking into our own data when we ask Canadians about the monarchy is the amount of people who do not like the monarchy, but at the same time have a deep favorable rating and respect for the Queen. That is always something that has fascinated me. You look at almost 25% of Canadians, sometimes 30% of Canadians saying we should be a republic. Among those Canadians, the favorability rating for Queen Elizabeth is higher than 60%, which is something that most politicians would kill for. So it's quite fascinating to see that this is a figure who maybe, if Canadians aren't particularly thrilled with what she represented, was still seen in a very favorable light.
Andy, what one word describes Queen Elizabeth and her legacy to you?
I think that in the light of what Mario has just said, duty. And I think that part of that respect was really how she was able to, I think, step up in terms of a sense of public duty, a sense of resolve, which would have been my close number second, of really what she was able to kind of conduct throughout her life. And yes, in the face of, I think, sizable, I think, rethinks in terms of what a monarchy, what a constitutional monarchy, legacies of colonialism, and really what it meant for the world history, that I think she was able to be this institution almost that I think was able to, I think in one way, and I think that this is a fair question moving forward, to kind of portray a level of public duty that she was able to do. And really how I think that is, I think one of her legacies is, I think, a commitment to public duty that I think is perhaps what we're here to also talk about on the threshold of a whole round of civic elections.
Indeed, it's the legacy in action of the Magna Carta. Mm-hmm. Here in British Columbia, coming up October 15th, the municipal mm-hmm. elections in Vancouver, which is the big kahuna. Research Co., Mario Canseco, your company did a poll along with Glacier Media. You found that the top three issues are housing, the drug overdose situation, and then crime, poverty, taxes in that order. But housing, over and above all, remains a big issue for well over a third of voters.
Yes, what is quite striking about the numbers is that we haven't really seen a lot of movement on the issues for the past year. Housing has always been the number one issue for more than a third of voters. There's a little bit of moving around when it comes to the second and third issue. Crime, which is essentially the campaign of the NPA, is only 9%. It hasn't really climbed the charts outside of Surrey, as we've asked people in Metro Vancouver. Drug overdoses at 14%. This is not a shock because we're just coming off the latest report on just how devastating this crisis has been. So it's normal for that to be a little bit higher. But what is really striking is housing is climbing the charts with every group. Going back to the elections of 2011, 2014, it was a big concern for people 18 to 34, but those aged 35 to 54 or over the age of 55 were more likely to be worried about other issues, particularly property taxes if you're a homeowner. So now it definitely turns this into a race that is going to be directly related to housing. And it's not a situation where you see the changes from the east side to the west side. Regardless of where you live in the city, unless you are downtown, you're more likely to be concerned about housing than anything else.
I found it interesting in some of your results when you looked at the age brackets that decided voters 55 and up, Ken Sim of ABC Vancouver has a slight edge over Kennedy Stewart. When it comes to decided voters 35 to 54, Kennedy Stewart has quite a large advantage over Ken Sim. Talk about how those numbers shake out for you. And of course, there is the Colleen Hardwick effect when it comes to decided voters 55 and up. She's got 17%. She's got quite a ways to grow, and there could be some movement along the way before Election Day, especially when there's more issues debated and more debates that happen. But I find that interesting that the 55 and up, Sim has that slight edge, whereas 35 to 54, it's Stewart all the way.
Yes, it's very interesting to look at the way the Forward Together campaign is connecting with middle-aged voters. 46% level of support with the 35 to 54 demographic. This is a group that grew up with Vision Vancouver. In a way, this is the Generation Xer that in his or her early stages was really thrilled about the bike lanes and now is trying to look for a place to send their kids as far as daycare. That generation isn't really looking at Ken Sim as much as other NPA candidates in the past. The Colleen issue is very interesting because she's at 23% with women. This is just 3% less than what we see for Ken Sim, and in a very strong third place among this group. This is similar to what we saw with Shauna Sylvester back in 2018. A lot of women who are looking at the ballot and finding a woman and saying, this is somebody who I want to support. And in a way, this is roughly the same type of level of support that Shauna Sylvester had in the 2018 election, around 17, 18%. What's really striking also is Mark Morrison is at 13%. The last election, we only had three candidates who were climbing into double digits. Bremner, Harding were far behind. So was Wai Young, and so was Chen. So now you have four people in double digits. And with 6 weeks to go, 5 weeks to go, anything can happen. A lot of movement between the four main candidates with younger voters. It seems that Mark Morrison's discussions about revitalizing the nightlife are working, and he's at 21%. But again, we need to remember the way in which elections are won, which is voters over the age of 55, where Ken Sim has a bit of an edge, and also the organizational aspect. And this is where Kennedy Stewart probably has a little more experience because of what happened 4 years ago. And this is the reason why they are the front runners, even if Hardwick and Morrison are making this significantly more competitive than other Vancouver ballots that we've had this century.
Andy Yan from the Simon Fraser University City Program. Andy, you're also known as the Duke of Data. And within Mario's poll, he found some interesting geographic spreads that Ken Sim has advantage on the west side.
Right.
Kennedy Stewart has advantage on the east side.
Right.
And almost like a tiebreaker, Kennedy Stewart has the advantage downtown among voters in those areas. Can you analyze how that breaks down with Sim on the west, Stewart in the east, and Stewart downtown, and what that might mean?
Well, I think it's all about getting the vote out. I think that one of the aspects and one of the interesting electoral aspects of how, who and where people vote is what it's kind of what I call the civic crescent, this kind of connection of, if you will, we don't have the kind of wards we in civic elections. We have like just basically just polls, and within those polls you can now vote. But I think what's interesting is when you look at who is engaged in voting, you actually find this crescent that it comes in from East Vancouver, sweeps on west along, say, around, well, say around 12th or Broadway, and just sweeps on right into Kitsilano. And it's an area that you see actual really strong turnouts in terms of local, provincial, and federal voting. You have people who fail out their census, and perhaps most interestingly enough, great places to trick or treat. And so between those three factors, that's really, I think, really where the strong pools of voters come from. But of course, another, I think, really important kind of context to give to civic elections in the city of Vancouver in particular is the fact that they're at large. That it isn't the fact that you actually have just where and just where you're seeing pockets of support. It's how you can draw them all out and just come out in volume. And I think that this is really going to be the interesting thing, is the ground game. It's the ground game of getting the voters out and just to make sure that they don't have, I think, what some people call the Brown effect in the United States, where mm-hmm. there's the what people say whom they will be voting for, and then people suddenly have this sudden moment of change of thought of who they actually vote for in the booth. And I think that this is the thing to watch, is whether they'll be consistent in towards what they tell fine pollsters like Mario Canseco and what they'll actually tick off on October 15th. Remember the vote, that on October 15th, will those results be consistent, as well as will their supporters and what they report out to fine pollsters like Mario Canseco and what people will actually do.
I asked Mario Canseco about ABC Vancouver's ad campaign, the most aggressive and best funded so far. ABC has claimed Kennedy Stewart would impose a road tax when reelected, costing up to $30 per vehicle per trip. I asked campaign manager Karim Alam for proof. He does not have any, and Stewart has flatly denied. ABC has also promised to hire 100 new police officers on day one, but the most it could do is actually provide the Vancouver Police Department a budget increase to begin a recruitment campaign. It could be a while, a long while, before any new boots on the ground.
Mario, talk about this messaging that ABC's been pushing forward that isn't entirely factually sound.
Well, there's a couple of things that are very unique about the way ABC has been campaigning. It has been consistently asking for a majority. And this is very different from elections in the past, where everything revolves around the mayor. And if you vote for the mayor, and hopefully he'll be able to get things on and to work with people across the entire council to try to get policy through. And the messaging from ABC this time around has been a majority government with us is going to guarantee this, 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 and this. Now, this makes sense because we're coming off a very dysfunctional 4 years, a lot of problems getting policy through and a lot of discussions that haven't really panned out the way people expected them. So it makes sense for them to appeal to a larger group and to say, this isn't just about Ken Sim getting more votes than Kennedy Stewart. This is about us having at least five more votes, otherwise we can't get the policy through. It's a complicated issue when it comes to the supposed congestion charge. I think it's a way to try to display Ken Sim's and ABC's hope to channel the MPA voter who is deeply dissatisfied by everything related to bike lanes, whether these bike lanes are located downtown or on Stanley Park, and essentially try to talk to motorists and say, this is going to be more costly for you if you're somebody who's driving downtown. Even if the policy doesn't seem to be rooted in reality, but it's a way in which they are trying to connect and to say to people that they would do things differently. But it's quite a complicated campaign because this is the kind of thing that they will have to defend during debates. And they will have to explain to what we're hoping are going to be very well prepared moderators, how this is a policy that can be implemented when we know clearly that it's a Metro Vancouver issue, which also has ramifications in the entire province. So once again, we're having a campaign where we're not talking about the things that the candidates or the council can do, but ultimately pinning specific hopes in them or things that we dislike, which they actually can do.
In 2018, Beijing businessman and former West Van Kop Fred Harding ran for Vancouver First and received almost 6,000 votes in the race for mayor, while Ken Sim led the NPA but fell 957 votes shy of Kennedy Stewart. After John Cooper's sudden resignation at the start of August, the NPA re-imported Harding almost a month later, and the city's oldest party has lost momentum. I asked Andy Yan if the NPA is beyond its best before date.
I think that it's probably under some serious pressure. Certainly, if they aren't able to even show up, with any successful council members. I think that it's a mess. That you look at really what's happening in the NPA, it looks like it's incredibly messy. I mean, heaven knows what's the kind of internal kind of the divisions that are happening within the NPA. And I think at the same time, it was historically the oldest civic party in the city of Vancouver. It is one that has, you know, that used to hold power for almost 70 years, and now to kind of see it kind of in one way kind of go into disarray is really, I think, just how politics have changed, civic politics in particular of Vancouver has changed. That I think what used to be, say, an easy kind of left-right split between COPE and NPA has become much more messy. And I think that the kind of overall kind of economic schema of the city, the kind of the demographic dynamics of who lives in the city of Vancouver today, I think perhaps represents a time where we're now post-NPA COPE kind of dichotomies into something that perhaps is a lot more messier. And I think that really coming into really how the composition of council is going to look like, I think that part of this is just electoral math and how you can prospectively look. I mean, one really interesting kind of world would, well, you know, quite possibly could be what happens when it's a Kennedy Stewart mayoralty mixed in with a ABC council, that it's going to be a mayor that, again, the question for the mayoral candidates is, do they have a halo effect to help bring forward the council members into the chambers? And yet at the same time, on the whole spectrum of left right, you actually see really where, say, those who are, say, on the more kind of center left center is kind of more broken up in terms of what's going on in the mayoralty race. It's almost the opposite when we talk about council. And I think that that's really going to be, I think, the thing to watch as we kind of move forward and, you know, move into the next 4 weeks.
I asked Mario Canseco about the other two challengers, Mark Marison, a veteran BC Liberal backroom strategist and lobbyist who was married to Christy Clark, and Councillor Colleen Hardwick, who was elected to City Council with the NPA in 2018.
We haven't had a female mayor in Vancouver, and she's also been a candidate who's been very much contrarian on some issues, right. Other issues very much back to basics, no nonsense, demanding transparency. And she also has been the one who spearheaded some reforms at City Hall with the Auditor General at City Hall and with the Ethics Commissioner. She has introduced some new ideas, new checks and balances that weren't there before.
Well, I think she's connecting very well, particularly with women. You know, to be at 23% among women at this stage is phenomenal. One thing that is quite curious is we see the level of support at roughly the same level across the region, but doing very well on the east side. And this goes counter to the narrative of this is somebody from the west side who doesn't really care about issues that are happening east of Main Street. She's at 21% east of Main Street. So definitely somebody who's connecting well at a wider range, certainly not at the level that we see for Stewart or for Sim, but with some potential to grow. Mark's issue is that his base is concentrated particularly with young voters. I think there's certainly a level of engagement that he has been able to bring into this race, particularly because of his statements on housing and also on the revitalization of Vancouver as a place where people can have fun. His level of support with younger voters is 21%. It drops to 7% with middle-aged voters. and it falls to 1% with the 55 plus. And if you're at 1% with the 55 plus, you're not going to win the election. This is one of the most crucial aspects of this. I think he's connecting very well with specific groups, but if you knock on doors of people who are already committed to Sinner, to Hardwick, or who are satisfied with what Kennedy Stewart has done, it's going to be very complicated. Right. And to me, that is the main challenge at this stage. You know, can you figure out a way to connect with middle-aged and older voters? Right now, he's connecting with the young ones because he's saying the things about housing that they want to hear. And in a way, it's reminiscent of the Hector Bremner campaign. You know, he was the one who was talking about housing for everybody, yes to everybody, we're going to build things. And we started to see that level of support tapering off, concentrating on the younger demographics, but not getting anywhere with the over 35s.
But I think mixed into this is like, will the young voters show up?
Of course.
That at the end of the day, it's like, oh, I mean, older voters have a older demographics, just older people in those demographics just have a tendency of showing up to vote as opposed to, I think, just responding to a poll, but actually just the act of showing up to vote. I think that's a fairly consistent pattern. And if somehow I think he's able to activate that younger population, I think that's really going to be something to watch is whether he's able to activate those young voters to show up to vote.
And before we get into the lightning round, want to talk about the other splitting in this election. We talked a lot about over many months about the splitting on the right. I mean, you got mm-hmm. Kennedy Stewart, which still has the center left, but all the others are competing on the center right. The left wing parties with no mayoral candidates who are competing for the seats on council, the 10 open seats on council, mm-hmm. the Greens, mm-hmm. COPE, One City, Vision Vancouver, and the Socialists. There's a lot of competition there for the left-wing vote, and none of these parties has a leader going for a mayor. Some of the parties, like One City and the Greens, for instance, have endorsement from the Vancouver District Labor Council, which is also endorsing Kennedy Stewart for mayor. But you've got these five parties competing for the left wing vote. What do you think is going to come out of this, Andy Yan?
Well, I think that's interesting is that for all the parties that are in the left wing, are they just going to be just enough to weaken everybody else so that the right wing council members kind of come on through? And I think that, again, you got to think about the structure of our council is how they help people pick out of a pool of 10 and really how it's going to be. I think an interesting thing to watch is that if this, you know, this amount of left-wing, center-left kind of candidates just happen to have an effect just enough to negate each other that you have a slew of middle and right, slightly right candidates kind of come on in through the middle. So I think that's going to be one of the kind of really odd things to watch is that we may have this another complete mismatch between a mayor and the composition of council.
Okay, we'll continue with lightning round. How many candidates will be forced to quit the campaign or lose party support for misconduct, for a bozo eruption, or for something worse? How many candidates will be forced to quit the campaign or lose their party support before October 15th? Will it be less than two or more than two? I just want you to say less than two or more than two. What do you think it'll be, this over-under type question? Mario.
Oh. More than two.
Andy.
In the age of social media and the way of digging, more than two.
Yeah.
And we'll come back to this question as we have before. Will the barge be gone by October 15th? Yes or no?
Vote barge. No. No.
Mario. No, I think it stays there.
If it's going to stay, then could it become an election issue? Or will it become a campaign stop, a photo op prop for a candidate? What do you think, Andy? Election issue or campaign stop / photo op prop?
Let's make barge great again moment.
I would say that if the MPA starts to climb the charts, somebody's going to take a picture there and say, this barge has been here longer than, it has been in Vancouver longer than Fred Harding.
That's the perfect way to end this roundtable, the MMA roundtable. Mackin, Mario, and Andy on the Breaker.News podcast. We'll have you back again once, twice, thrice between now and October 15th to rate and debate what's happening with the Vancouver Civic election. And next time, we'll also look at some of the elections in the suburbs, including the crazy times in Surrey. Thanks again for joining me on the Breaker.News podcast. Mario Canseco, president of Research Co., and Andy Yan, the director of the City Program at Simon Fraser University.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, U.S. delegation is symbol of Congress commitment to Taiwan. Representative Stephanie Murphy sees more opportunities for closer bilateral ties. Murphy is leading a 7-member delegation to Taiwan. She said their visit is a symbol of Congress's rock-solid commitment to Taiwan. She said that growing bilateral ties have also led to more opportunities for closer cooperation and coordination across trade, security, and cultural exchanges. The delegation met with President Tsai Ing-wen, National Security Council Secretary General Wellington Ku, and Foreign Minister Joseph Wu. In Kyoto news, ex-Olympic exec suspected of using consulting firm to accept bribes. Haruki Takahashi, a former Tokyo Olympic Organizing Committee executive at the heart of a corruption scandal, is suspected of using close business ties between his consulting firm and another headed by an acquaintance to receive bribes from a publishing company. Takahashi and Kazumasa Fukami are believed to have pushed for the organizing committee to use Daiko advertising as an agent when selecting sponsors, and investigators suspect more than 10 million yen was paid by Daiko as bribes to Takahashi. Both men are ex-employees of advertising giant Dentsu. In Hong Kong Free Press, Dark Side of the Moon Festival. Mountains of mid-autumn waste sour the occasion for Hong Kong green groups. More than 4.6 million unwanted mooncakes, heaps of unrecyclable packaging and plastics polluting the sea. Environmental charities shed light on an annual problem. The green groups surveyed more than 300 families in July and August about their habits concerning the giving and receiving of the decadent pastry products. The results, released last month, showed a 61% increase in unwanted mooncakes compared with the previous year. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Oregonian, Oregon likely misspent coronavirus relief funds, failed to report accurate data on some federally funded programs, state auditors find. Auditors from the Oregon Secretary of State's office identified $4.8 million that was spent in violation of federal rules and another $5.2 million that might have also been misspent based on a random sample of expenditures for 18 federal programs, according to the annual statewide single audit released in July and a summary of the audit results released this week. Roughly 85% of the questionable spending occurred when the Oregon Health Authority and Department of Administrative Services potentially misused coronavirus relief funds allocated by the federal government. Auditors found that the Health Authority provided grants to over 400 government and non-government organizations, but did not conduct timely or adequate monitoring of those recipients to ensure compliance with federal regulations or verify that grantees weren't leaving money unspent. In the Seattle Times, Washington's COVID state of emergency will lift on October 31st. Governor Jay Inslee is lifting the emergency order he imposed on February 29th, 2020, at the outset of the coronavirus pandemic. Inslee's office has gradually rolled back the majority of his 85 COVID emergency orders, including those related to business and restaurant closures, stay-at-home orders, remote learning, and limits on large gatherings. Nearly all indoor mask mandates are gone. Vaccine verification requirements have loosened, and while the virus is still circulating and infecting Washingtonians throughout the state, recent COVID trends have been encouraging. In Czech news, RCMP say no criminality found after Malahat Skywalk incident. One person died at the Malahat Skywalk on Labor Day, according to police. Described as the ultimate natural high, the Skywalk opened in July 2021 and features a 10-story spiral tower that rises 250 meters above sea level along the Finlayson Arm. A Czech News viewer said her husband witnessed someone fall off the tower from very high up. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate. Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
the late Queen Elizabeth II. Rewind to the most important moment of the most important royal visit to Canada, April 17, 1982, on Parliament Hill in Ottawa. Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau and the Queen signing Canada's new constitution into law.
The moment the Queen puts her signature on this document, it becomes law. It will be witnessed later. The Constitution is now home.
The Constitution, which so splendidly met the needs of the very young Canada of the late 19th century, could not have anticipated the conditions of national life in 1982 and beyond. It is fitting, therefore, that the main features of Canada's new constitution should be that it strengthens the rights of its people while establishing a process of amendment which will make needed changes easier to accomplish than they were in the past. Today, I have proclaimed this new constitution, one that is truly Canadian at last.
On that day, Canada was finally in control of its future.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 11th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 11th of September in 2001, you probably know this already, the horrific Al-Qaeda terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center, Pentagon, and in Pennsylvania. Please share a thought for the 2,977 innocents who died that day. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You could support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week.